We should have it made a final vote.
If the committee will look at the bill.
Remember the amendment on, we had an amendment on page three of the bill in section two, which basically, over there, it says this act governs all. Where's that original? Yeah, all actions for contribution or indemnity filed subsequent to its effective date. And then we were trying to plug in over on line 17, 18, and 19 of page two, an amendment in the proper amendment that we're going to put into this is on page two, line 18, after the word subsection, delete the word or, and on line 19, delete the word void, and insert after the word subsection, enter into after the effective date. No, I'm sorry. The word void stays in. Enter into after the effective date of this act are void. So the whole section will now read, except as provided in paragraph B of this subsection, all agreements or warranties contrary to the provisions of paragraph A of this subsection entered into after the effective date of this act are void. That will handle the problem that they were talking about.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would it be too much to ask somebody to explain this thing one more time?
I will explain it to you. What happened is that if you read sub C as it's presently written in the bill, it says...
Not the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, the bill?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just the third party.
Okay.
Thing, how it affects that relationship.
Okay. If you...
I realize
what the bill had to do with
bill.
Is that with the idea of the workman's comp being the exclusive remedy, there were some employers who entered into what they call with indemnification agreements or warranty agreements with other third parties. And what happens is that for years, everyone always thought that those claims were barred. The claims for the indemnification as far as the workman was concerned. And what basically has happened, as I understand, is that the workman's injured on the job, and an employer who has to pay the claim has an agreement, this indemnification or warranty agreement with a third party, he then involves himself in litigating those indemnification agreements.
The third party in this case being the premises, the owner of the premises, where the workman is.
He'd be the employer.
Oh, the company that the person works for would not be the.
Yes.
Are we talking about the case, the example that was given where the painter worked for ABC Painting Company and was doing work on DEF's?
That type of situation.
Property, and he got hurt on DEF's property.
But the thing is that now you got it. I think what most people confuse it with is the old joint supervision and control. This is not that. This is the question when there's a warranty out there or an indemnification, a contractual agreement to reimburse another party. And that's what they've gotten involved in. And it's a question, basically, it's litigation among insurance companies. And what happened is that it used to be in the federal law with the longshoremen. This is where you used to see all these claims. In 1972, Congress passed a law prohibiting these. And all of a sudden, in 75 when the Supreme Court case gave the Kaiser Gypsum?
Yes.
That was 75? And they resurrected this concept, and now all of a sudden, they're starting to enter into these agreements and litigate on them now. And so what happens is that when the workman's comp claim is ended, that isn't the end of many of these things. It's just the beginning of the litigation.
That's where the employer who was paying the benefits or paying for the insurance
policy is going on to the indemnification.
Then he is taking action against
that. On indemnification or warranty or whatever it is.
Person who, on whose premises the man was hurt?
It isn't the premise. The premises don't have anything to do with it. It's the contractual agreement, whether express or implied, that he had with a third party. Take the and the reason the subsection B is in is that if I, George, you were here when the railroads came in, and you don't understand what the internet. What happens is, I understand the railroads, when they push these cars into these factories or places,
industrial spur,
that they've got George out there working, or somebody out there working. Maybe it's I don't know if it's an employee of the company or whatever it is, but the railroads enter into these contractual agreements with these companies for indemnification for any damages or injuries that occur.
Neither.
Is that correct?
So you can handle it either way.
Yeah.
I mean, if George got hurt, then the agreement would be that the other person, the other place would pay reimbursed the railroad.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And so that's why they've got the public utilities, because they do so much, and railroads, because they do so much work on other people.
That's exactly correct.
Property.
And that's a standard form of contractual agreement they all entered into. And I understand there are other utility carriers that do the same thing.
I don't know.
And so that's why B is the exception to the general rule that we're going to avoid those agreements.
We're going to avoid those agreements except for railroads and utilities?
Yeah, all of those that are covered under subject to regulation pursuant to RS 756 and 760.
So railroads and utilities will still be able to enter into these agreements?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's exactly correct.
Mr. Chairman, how would that apply to contractors coming in and doing work on someone else's premises, like a painting subcontractor being hired by ABC Manufacturing Company to repaint the offices?
To my knowledge, I doubt if they entered into those agreements, do they? There are no agreements in that area.
Okay.
They do. That's something that isn't done.
This just applies where there are and where there is
agreement. Yes, it's a contractual agreement.
Implied or expressed.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And we're going to open it up and for those, and as Lumen.
Is the summary on this bill correct?
Lumen.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, that summary sounds to me like it's in reverse. Unless you're authorizing immunity from claims asserted by.
Okay, I've got it going the wrong way, probably.
The way it looks to me is just kind of the reverse of what we were talking.
Yeah.
Here.
Why don't you give this diagram to him and let him see it? That's the same problem I had when I carried the Joint Supervision Control Statute trying to.
Okay. You have three lawsuits involved. You have the employer who pays his injured worker. The worker also sues the third party. The third party pays the worker too. The third party feels that the employer is primarily responsible. He goes after the employer or the employer's insurer for indemnity. What this bill does is prevents the indemnity suit
between
this
suit
and this suit.
Except in the case of utilities and railroads, where they could still sue.
That's right. When they have a contract out there.
Everybody thinks it's a good bill.
Yeah.
Are you ready for the motion on the amendment?
Yes. So, Gary, are you okay? I mean, not everybody, Gary. I mean, if we want to, I think we could probably, if we look hard enough, we could probably find somebody that says that isn't such a good idea.
Oh, well, it sounds like a great idea. You should understand it more than the immediate moment when you're talking about it.
Okay. Bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 301A engrossed on page 2, line 18, after the word subsection, insert the words entered into after the effective date of this act.
So why don't you...
And so the new...
Why don't I put it in there, 1977 Act?
All right.
Okay. The word 1978. Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? So adopted. Bill, why don't you pick up that one on page 3 also? Did we pick that one up? Why don't you pick up that one? Have you got that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
on page 3 of Senate Bill 301, they engrossed a move that be amended on line 6 with the insertion after the word actions of the words for contribution or indemnity, so that the sentence would now read, this act governs all actions for contribution or indemnity filed subsequent to its effective date.
You've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection?
No. Is there more to it?
No.
No.
No, that's no amendment.
Okay.
Hearing none, the amendment's adopted. Representative Rogers moves A. Engrossed Senate Bill 301 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any? Well, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Otto?
Aye.
Representative Riebel?
Aye.
Representative Rogers?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm?
Aye.
Chairperson Kulongoski?
Aye. A. Engrossed Senate Bill 301 as amended is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Send it down to E&E.
Supposed to carry?
Yeah, I'll carry it. The first bill that I'd like to get up on the agenda today is Senate Bill 462. Senator Attia is going to be here. Are you going to get Senator Attia for us? Yeah, I want you to find it.
I'd be glad to give you a motion on 462, Mr. Chairman.
No, I want you to hang on to 462, Representative Rogers. I don't want these. Do you have the sign up sheets, Jim?
You have them all.
Yeah, it was here. I got them.
Okay.
Gary?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Christine. I live in Grants Pass, Oregon. I represent the Painters Union. We want to come before you this morning to strongly support Senate Bill 462. We have a problem in our industry of it not being an industry that is very hard to get into. That anybody that wants to buy a ladder and a couple paint brushes and a paint bucket can get into it. And therefore, in lots of cases, employers should be considered legitimate employers in our industry aren't very formal in their relationships with governmental agencies, or frankly, with any legitimate business enterprise. Consequently, we have a good many partnerships, so-called partnerships. And so we really have a problem in our industry of these employers not being competitive with not just union employers, but employers in our industry that go to the trouble of setting up payroll accounts, setting up unemployment accounts and workman comp accounts. And so... any legislation that would help in encouraging employers to be responsible and be fair and to share the costs of the industry in which they choose to work, we think would be of great benefit. So I think with those remarks, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to respond, but that concludes what I have
to say. Mr. Chairman.
Bill, here's,
Jerry, I'll call you back after that. If you want to listen to the amendments the senator has, if you want to look at them then, or you can comment on them afterwards. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My interest in the bill started with one of those bills that became controversial, Senate Bill 430. It's a bill I signed and that I wished I hadn't, and I'm sure that never happened to you.
Never.
No. The bill went a lot farther than I wanted to go. Well, we're looking at it from my concept, and the one thing I've been dealing with for about as long as I've been in the Oregon legislature is the trick of people calling themselves independent contractors for the sole purpose of escaping a variety of things, including unemployment and workman compensation payments. I'm aware of the problem that's been described by the gentleman who was just before you, and the bill you have now narrowed it down to the construction industry. 430 covered a lot more than I wanted to and many other members wanted to, so we're only dealing with the construction industry. I supported the bill when it passed the Senate. I was aware, really, that there are still some problems remaining, and I made it a point of my own to see if I couldn't get some appropriate amendments to deal with the subject, talking with the members of the FFL-CIO and the Associated General Contractors. I do have amendments. However, we've been out in the hall talking about them, and we're not sure the amendments do exactly what we want. By that, I mean the language does exactly what we want to do. And so I'm going to tell you, Mr. Chairman, what it is we're attempting to do in terms of amendments, and then we'll get the correct, agreeable language to you. This that I have is hot off the press, and it really is not quite the language as it ought to be. But let me tell you what it is we're attempting to do. The bill itself was trying to get those who were not paying workman's compensation and were coming on jobs, they're trying to get a contractor then to use that contractor as a policeman, in effect, to try to get at these so-called, quote, independent contractors. That's the case, and that's what's being attempted. And I think I'm actually expressing it a little different than Lott would, but just from my view. Then I think it's important that the contractor himself has some degree of protection. That's what we're trying to get at. And there are four points. Well, there are three main points and then one technical amendment. First one is to say that if this occurs, that the subcontractor, in fact, is not carrying unemployment, workman's compensation, that the contractor himself who does have workman's comp, is not a non-complying employer. Just to say he's not a non-complying employer. The theory is that he may be because of this, because we're now connecting him, the contractor, to the subcontractor, that somehow he may become a non-compliant. Now, there are those who contend that that's not true, that in fact, SAFE looks at it, that no matter what happens, he is not a non-compliant employer. However, we feel more comfortable if the law says he's not. So nobody disagrees with that. Just say in words that he's not a non-compliant. Now, the contractor has to have coverage, or he becomes non-compliant. But if he has coverage on his own workman and then has a sub who doesn't, he doesn't automatically become non-compliant. That's number one. Number two, there's a section of the law that we passed was last session in terms of retainage. The contractor can only retain 5%. That was one time when the AGC and the Tia brothers went two different directions, because I'm usually a subcontractor and I know about this retainage business. So I said that a contractor cannot retain more than 5%. So the second point, I think these words are fairly close. I want to check them out. But that the contractor, being such person, may withhold an amount equal to the cost of providing coverage for workers' compensation benefits for those persons referred to in subsection 1 of this section, which is the subcontractor. So we go on to say that the contractor can retain what would be the premium payments. So we're adding that. The third point is that under the situation as it now would be in the bill, an injured workman could collect both under workman's compensation and also sue a separate suit to the contractor. And so the third amendment would say you can go just the one route, one way. You can't go both ways. That's been agreeable in the intent of what we're trying to do. Those are the three major amendments that we're talking about. The fourth one is a technical amendment. It's actually, if I remember correctly, on the last line of your bill, it describes structure. And it just says structure. I don't have, you have the bill there somewhere.
It's right there, center.
line 19.
The word structure. I'm going to read to you, after of, on your bill, leave the rest of the line and insert improvements to real property. That's a better definition of what's intended to be structure. I envisioned it differently. I was thinking of construction of houses. Actually, this would mean all kinds of construction work, laying pipe, drainage, sidewalk, curbs, streets, you know, all that. That's what it's intended to cover. That's a better definition, but that's a technical amendment. Again, that's agreeable to everyone. It's broader. It covers all improvements to real property. So those are the amendments. We are in agreement that those intents should be in the bill. Our problem right now in the hall is whether or not this language does it. So I'll have to get you the kind of language that, and I will see that you get it. If it's agreeable to the committee, the kind of language will do that.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
I've got one question for Vic. Vic, within the construction industry, are there not some people who are legitimate partnerships or sole proprietors who subcontract work?
I'm sure that there are. I would say, however, to my knowledge, Representative Rogers, that this particular industry has an awful lot of those who are more or less pseudo subcontractors. And the legitimate ones, I'm sure, are doing all of the things that are legitimate in their industry. They're not the ones that would even become involved in this bill. Because actually, if the subcontractor is a complying employer and is paying workman's comp, he doesn't become involved in this bill in any event. He's already taken care of.
But the intent of this bill, the intent of 430 and the intent of this, is to get at those phony partnerships.
That's correct.
Seems to me that this is going the wrong way. We're going to penalize those people who are indeed legitimate contractors, either as a sole proprietor or as a partner, and do not have any other employees. We're going to penalize those people by forcing them to do something that they may not want to do. I know we force a lot of other things, but...
Well, that's, of course, you answered the question. We do that, and oftentimes we throw the net out, and...
Not a safety net.
Okay. And you get a lot more in the net than you intended. As a matter of fact, that's what 430 did, this larger net. I can't disagree with you, and yet the only point I'm making is that it's serious enough in this industry that we really ought to pass the law. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but this is quite serious.
Isn't there another way that we can accomplish that without penalizing these people who should not be penalized?
I don't know the answer to that. I think, I guess I'm sensing from what you're saying that you don't disagree with what we're attempting to do.
Right.
I don't have another answer.
See, I find there's essentially no difference between this bill and Senate Bill 430, except that this is narrowed down in scope as to who it applies to.
I agree.
And so this is, if we narrow it down to apply to this group, next session will be narrowing, coming back in and expanding this thing till eventually it'll be back out to where Senate Bill 430 would have taken us.
Well, I hope I'm not here when that happens, but I can understand again why you're worried about it. I think a case has to be made, however, in order to do the expansion that you're talking about. I really believe that the case has been well made in terms of the construction industry. I believe it has been. At least it's been to my satisfaction.
Senator, the second idea that you talked about is this retainage. Would the withholding of the premium being in addition to the 5% retainage, or would that...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It'd be above the legal 5%.
Chairman?
George.
Vic, would you tell me again what that language on line 19 that you suggested, or approximate language?
Vic, do you have a bill out there?
Once you have it,
is there one here somewhere?
Here it is.
Okay. Where you referred to the word structure. On line 19, after the word of, you delete the rest of the line. And you insert improvements to real property.
Improvements to real property?
Right.
Okay. Okay. So, it's quite a broad definition. It's much broader a definition than the one that's in the bill.
Demolition.
Glenn,
two questions, Vic. You mentioned retainage, and following up on Ted's question, you're saying the 5% plus.
Correct.
All right, fine. And the other thing was in point number three that you had, and you indicated that there was agreement. We agree. Now, who is we?
Well, I've been talking with Pat Randall and Jack Kalinowski, and it's at my request.
All right, now, under three, the injured workman would have the route of either workman's comp or suing, but not both. Is that correct?
Under the way that these amendments are drafted,
mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking at right now. And I want to make sure I leave it a little bit loose so that I don't box in anybody that doesn't want to be boxed in because of our conversation. I'm going to read it to you. Actually, what it says is that you go through the fund, to the workman's comp fund. If the person letting the contract pays to the state accident insurance fund the amounts required by subsection 2 of this section on behalf of a person who incurs a compensable injury, the person letting the contract is relieved of all other liabilities for that injury to any person entitled to recover damages therefore, meaning he goes through workman comp, and there's no suit outside of workman comp, third-party suit. That's what that says.
That's when he has coverage.
That's when he has coverage, correct.
And then when he doesn't have
coverage. No. You understand under the bill we're dealing with, let's say he doesn't have coverage. The employer retains what would amount to a premium for that injured workman. In fact, he will have coverage. We're trying to tie the whole thing together. We want to make sure the language does that.
That's the purpose of the retainage?
Pardon?
Is that the purpose of the retainage that you mentioned?
Yeah, but I have to also say to you that it's my understanding under workman's compensation that the employee is always covered, even if there is no premium paid on him, and then they go after the non-compliant employer to collect. I want to make sure, as I'm sure you do, that the injured workman is not getting in the box somewhere, that he's covered. There's no question that he's covered. The injured workman is covered. All we're trying to do now is to say that because of we're now doing something different. We are. I'm the subcontractor, you're the contractor. I move on your job. All of a sudden, I become a subject workman of yours. You know, you may not use me again as a subcontractor for a long time. We're changing our relationship is what we're doing. And all I'm trying to say is the argument is not in relation to the injured workman. That injured workman's going to get compensated. The argument now is between us, you complying, me non-complying, but you're going to be sort of the chief of police over me. We're making you responsible for me. This is what we're doing in this bill, making you responsible for me. It's a new relationship. Now, if we didn't say anything, I am now the injured workman. I can collect as I can through workman's comp, and I can also make a third-party suit on you. That's a different relationship that no other employee has, just because of the working of this bill.
Vic, that doesn't in any way, you think, infringe into the joint supervision and control bill that we passed last session?
No. No, I know the bill you're talking about.
181.
I didn't like it, but no, it doesn't.
I worked very hard for it.
No, it doesn't, and I know what you mean, and the legislature made a decision. No, this is not, I'm not trying to do anything tricky.
Glenn?
The other question I would have, Vic, supposing a subcontractor hires another subcontractor, the relationship would be the same? What I'm thinking of specifically is the plumbing and cooling trades, where a plumbing contractor that doesn't operate his own sheet metal operation will go ahead and sub out the sheet metal work to another contractor. What would be the relationship then of that subcontractor of the subcontractor?
I don't know the answer to it. I guess depends on the terminology of the law. You're a subcontractor and you're going to sub further, is mm-hmm. what you're saying.
And it's done quite frequently in the plumbing and cooling trades.
I saw a word here, and it's in a section we may change the language of, but I saw a word here that talks about letting a contract. I don't know the answer. But I would ask you, are you letting a contractor to your further sub?
Right.
I mean, would that term apply? You have to look at it when you finally get down to the bill. Just a minute here. I guess you could read it in there, Glenn. I'm reading both subsections 1 and 2. You better get a lawyer on it, but it looks to me like you could read it in and that they, in fact, would be covered under this law. But yeah, I think you better get a legal opinion. I'm not that sure about that.
Okay.
I hadn't even considered
that. That's a common practice.
I hadn't considered that. I really don't know.
Gary?
Okay. You've explained the bill and the amendments. I want to make sure that I clearly understand the need. What, in your opinion, is the need for the bill to start with? I've heard other people say it, but I want to need the bill is. I don't know the problem. I can think of a lot of them that this bill might create, but I don't, yeah. I'm trying to figure out where the problem is this bill is going to correct.
I think it can be better stated by those who will be appearing before you than even I can, because they're more intimately familiar with what's going on in the industry. Maybe even Representative Otto can explain it to you better than I can. But what we have are people who let themselves out as called independent contractors. In effect, they are part of, they're contracting for construction work. And yet, they're calling themselves independent contractors for the sole purpose of getting out of paying workman's compensation. I can tell you that I'm trying to reconstruct it because I've read some narrative on the subject of actual cases that have taken place of people who would go out on a job as an independent contractor. And I have to admit to you that some contractors are not blameless in this, because they can, if a person is not paying workman's comp, can bid in for less money than one who is paying workman's comp. It becomes unfair advantage where we're asking people to be covered under workman's compensation. And they're able to remain outside of the world in which all of the rest of us are in. They are, in effect, taking advantage, unfair advantage, of what we call complying, in this case, contractors. And what we're trying to do is to put us all on the same foot, all on the same level. They also complicate the process, because if they're injured, the injured workman gets, of course, compensable compensation for the injury, and all employers have to pay for that. All employers have to pay for it. So we're all suffering as a result of that. So we're saying we're going to make you responsible for the things that you do, in this case, the construction field.
You cover yourself with workman's comp?
We, at TR, me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Yeah, I work for a corporation. Yeah, I'm an employee. I own the corporation, but I'm an employee. I'm
so you're employee. Covered as an employee?
Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure the rate. Not sure the rate is right, but I'm not going to argue.
We can raise it if you think it's good.
That's not what I had in mind.
Senator, as soon as you have those amendments, I'll hang on to the bill until you get them.
Thank you very much. I want to make sure that we don't unglue something we didn't intend. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it very much coming over, Senator. Jerry, you want to come back up? Now, it seems to have been a three-way agreement or a conversation with Mr. Randall, Mr. Kalinowski, and Mr. Senator Attia. And if I think maybe if you want to talk with Mr. Randall, if you weren't privy to that conversation to find out what he had, then you can do that. But
just based on the representations made by Senator Attia, I think that there's some logic in the amendments that are proposed. Of course, we'd like to take a look at the final wording, as the senator would, obviously. And so, but I think that my general reaction off the back of the horse would be that they're not bad. I would like to say further that I, for one, am very pleased and appreciative of the remarks that the senator made before this committee, because he's out of the industry. And obviously, the senator's remarks could be, as always, characterized as being fairly independent, because organized building trades were not among his strongest supporters. However, his latest comments on this matter would make us pause to wonder if we did the right thing always.
Oh, I think that was thought of.
When you say the agreement.
Jerry, this is not the Coke convention, sir. You don't have to make that plea. You're going to get an opportunity. Al?
I just want to ask, is there ever again going to be anybody that can be an independent subcontractor who will not have to carry workman's comp mandatorily?
An independent contractor by himself? Are you talking a
sole proprietor or a partner who will not have to carry workman's comp mandatorily under this bill?
Well, Representative Abel, I can't answer that question. I would appreciate you asking somebody with more expertise in the area of who exactly that would. What I am concerned about, Representative Abel, and this bill will address itself to that, is the phony partnerships. But when you ask a question of a sole proprietorship, independent one person, I can't respond to that. And I'm not certain, and that's not, in my view, it's not our problem. Our problem is the phony partnerships. And when you, and some people get the assumed by when you say partnership, hell, we have cases of 6 and 7 partners. That's all there is working, but they're sick. They're all partners. Well, that's the problem we're trying to get to, and this bill will help us a good deal in that. But as far as the sole proprietor, that to be against them would be like be against motherhood and the flag. We're not against that, but we're trying to rectify another problem.
Yeah, but doesn't this bill take them in automatically?
I'm not certain that it does.
Well, it appears to me like there isn't any way for anybody ever to get into the building trades unless they're going to be covered with workman's comp. I mean, there isn't going to be any.
Well, Representative Abel, the point I'd make with you is that, hey, we're all in that ballgame out there. We all have the same risks. We should all have the same general responsibilities to the industry. Then that's not so bad. You know, who's going to pay the bills of the guy that's the sole proprietorship that gets hurt? Who pays those bills?
Well, we just had a bill in here, 2820, which dealt with the independent logging contractor, whom we all agreed that he was going to take care of himself. Now we're back talking about another group of people that we're going to automatically take care of them.
Okay, let me suggest to you, Representative Rabel, that the logging industry is somewhat different than the construction industry in that day in and day out, you're out there bidding work. You're competing head-to-head. There's a matter of fairness that should be addressed. Now, sure, some loggers bid in a sense that they'll bid with a mill or they'll buy stumpage and do this and work it themselves, but the construction industry is there's probably not a more highly competitive business than that one. And it seems to me that if the legislature is going to impose workman compensation and unemployment and state withholding taxes, that's a law too, then there ought to be some protection for those people that comply with that, that do it because they believe in it, not because you make them do it, maybe, but because they believe in it. Well, they're entitled to some protection. They're entitled to know that whoever they're bidding against has got to pay those things at least too. I think that's fair. Loggers don't really have that day in and day out competitive situation. I don't believe. I'm not a logger, but my dad was, and so I think I'm right on that. Have I answered your question?
I tried. I think that it covers everybody.
Well, okay, maybe it does.
In the construction industry.
Yeah, we've got loggers in here now.
Industry today, somebody else tomorrow.
Well, let me say to you that I think that, in all fairness, that we ought to only have to defend the construction industry's involvement in this process and let somebody else suffer the consequences of defending whatever else comes down the pike.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, Frank, I've got
Bill, go ahead.
One. Oh, yeah, you've got a I got cut off before, and I just was afraid Jerry'd get up here and get away before I got back in here. You're involved in the painting portion of the construction industry. Are there not some guys out there who are painters who just one guy or two guys in a real partnership go around and do legitimate painting jobs, and they've been around for a long time. They've got a truck with their name on it. They've got a business address. Aren't there some of those people in the painting industry? They don't hire any. They don't hire anybody.
Yes, there are, Representative Rudd.
And those people will be caught up in by this bill.
Representative Rogers, that's right. But the problem is that it's becoming increasingly a problem in the construction industry that the partnerships are put together for the express purpose of avoiding the payment of workman compensation and unemployment. Sure, you're right. There are some people that just of their own free will are out there as entrepreneurs on their own. They want to be by themselves. They want us to leave them the hell alone. But the fact of the matter is that these other folks are causing the problem, which must be solved. It must be solved. And so, yes, we're gonna throw the baby out with the dishwater here a little bit, but the point is that the problem is serious enough. You know, you heard Senator Attia say this. In his estimation, there's justification for this legislation. And I could have stronger testimony than that, because he's been in it a long time. And he doesn't have the axe to grind that you may look at me and say that I do. But it may be hard for you to believe this concept, but construction unions are somewhat concerned about their industries, and we're concerned about our industry. See, I, as a labor representative, I don't bid jobs, but I know what problems our contractors have out there trying to compete with these guys that are set up for the express purpose of avoiding workman compensation, unemployment, state and federal withholding, Social Security. Something must be done about that.
And you don't think there's any other way to get at those people other than through this device?
I'd be very interested to hear any suggestions that you would have to make.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond to Representative Rogers. I think that what you have to realize is when this person gets injured on the job, whether it's an independent contractor, quote, or a phony partnership, or whatever you want to call it, somebody has to pay. Right?
Either he or someone.
Someone has to pay. All right, and then it becomes a burden upon society. And I think that these people should have to pay their fair share. It's just fair share all over again.
But there are many of these people who are in business for themselves who have taken care of themselves through a private insurance program or whatever, and so they're not going to become a burden upon anybody. And we're catching them up the same place here.
Thanks, Jerry.
Terrible.
Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Brother Chairman. Marvin Hall with the Oregon State Council of Carpenters. Gentlemen, we want to let you know that we strongly support this bill. Not having seen the amendments, they didn't sound too bad, but then I'm like everyone else.
You are.
I would like to cite a couple instances that I have ran across. I'm not going back 6 months. Oh, I'm not going back 2 years. I'm going right back now, and I'll go to Washington County, Senator Attia's area. A $1.5 million job. It's apartments, 30 people working on the job, 7 two-man partnerships, 2 three-man partnerships, 1 four-man partnership. No single employee on that job, no one covered on that job with any workman's compensation, much less not paying some of the taxes, but that's another area that somebody else's problem. If any one of these people had been injured on that job, he would have been properly taken care of by workman's compensation. These partners are partners because they must be to obtain the work. They could not pay the premium. That's why they're not covered. There are legitimate contractors that's out there. But these are not the... These people could not pay the premium. That's why they're not covered. One young man went to work on that job, just completed 18 months of community college training in carpentry. The first day on the job, he was told that he needed a skill saw. It cost him $115, and the contractor handed him the skill saw. The second day on that job, when he came on that job, he was given a piece of paper in which to sign. He said, "What's this?" He says, "You sign this here paper, give me $85, and I'll get you registered as a contractor with the state of Oregon." Now, we know that's not the way it happens, but this is what this young man was told. This man went to the job seeking employment. He could gain employment only when he became a contractor. Reason? To beat the taxes and workman's comp. Gentlemen, I could duplicate what you've just done here with the remodeling of this Capitol building without one single employee on the job covered under workman's comp. Not one. And that's what's happened in the industry today. You find 13 people, all partners. And there is no way that we have been able to see, because we have looked to try to protect the legitimate contractor. But this man, if he's going to work in the industry, and if he does get injured, and if he's covered himself under some other insurance, he no longer has to cover under that other insurance. So we're not double dipping him. He can get out of that and get covered into this here. There is a way to do this legally. Sure. This man becomes a social burden on the rest of the people that are paying their fair share. And in order to protect the industry from the unscrupulous contractor, and he is unscrupulous, or the builder, who says, "I'm going to sub this out, sub that out, and sub this out, and I will testify and go with you in any area you want to go to," that the builder that is using these phony subs charges the same amount for the resident that he is building when you go to buy it, because I can show them to you side by side after street, and the comparative price is not there because of the sub. The quality that's built into them is what's going to make the price. The subbing does not make housing cost anymore. This job out in Washington County had, I believe it was 14 fourplexes on the job. Those fourplexes were sold before all of them, 14 were sold before the first one was done. All of them were built by these people that were not covered under workman's compensation. And the carpenters, we do have quite a few accidents. We're not one of the most hazard by a long ways, but we do need the coverage. And these people that are seeking this employment in the industry are not contractors. They don't have tax numbers. The Builders Board, to prove a point, the Builders Board went on this job and in one day issued 29 violations under the builder's registration law in the state of Oregon. 29 violations on one day issued on that one particular job. So these people are the ones that need the protection. The industry needs protection. A legitimate contractor out here no longer can compete when you can beat him by not covering yourself by workman's compensation. And gentlemen, you're covered by workman's compensation under the state. But you would not have to be covered, or of course you made your own laws to protect yourself, which you should have. But if you went together and was going to do the same job that you're doing now and said, "No, we're going to call ourselves all subs, we do not need to now cover ourselves," you could obviously then bid for the job for less money. I don't think you would, but that's what's happened in the industry. And it is a very serious threat to the industry, and it needs correction. Originally, when the law started out, employers were just exactly that. And when a man subbed, he was a legitimate man. When the law was originally drawn up, was given the option to the employer, it was a fair law, and it was a just law. But we now have found that it's so easy to beat the system, simply by calling myself a contractor. All I have to get become a contractor is take $30, go down here and register, put up the bond, $3,000 bond, and get myself some business cards. That's all it requires in the state to be contractor. But by just doing that, I can beat the system. And when we all beat the system, we've got a real problem, because we're real close to anarchy, because we've got no policemen or no firemen or the rest of it.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Mr. Chairman.
I want you to know, Mr. Hall, that I think that most of us view us as subcontractors for the general public, who is the general contractor when we're down here.
Somewhere in your statement, you implied that any legitimate contractor is going to have workman's compensation, or to turn it around, that the having the workman's compensation coverage makes him a legitimate contractor. Now, did I misunderstand you?
I do use the word legitimate contractors. There are what I consider a legitimate contractor. I consider a man a legitimate contractor when he's properly paying his taxes and properly registered and doing the work. I believe that this bill will force this man to be covered under workman's compensation as I read it. And I certainly don't have the wisdom that you people have been able to garner together here through reading these bills. Yes, I think that this man will be covered. And there are fair, equitable contractors that out there that do bid, that do work independently. But there's no way that sole proprietorship, because I can build a house with the same number of people they were doing out there and calling themselves partners, that simply saying that I'm building this wall, he's building that wall, we build this wall, and as far as we're dividing the money, we're going to divide it up because we equally bid it as sole proprietorship. Unless you have everyone covered just by calling a man a contractor, a partner, a sole proprietor, I see no way to cover it out. I drove down here 56 miles an hour today. I violated the law. I'm very careful because I had a white car all the way, private escort. I may be a very safe driver at 70, but the law says that I will drive 55 miles an hour, and I think that's how laws are made. They don't exclude me because I'm 6 feet tall or 5 feet 10 or 4 feet 10. I think that the laws must cover everyone, and I think a man working on the job needs coverage so that he does not become social burdens to the rest of us. And I feel that this man, paying his insurance through workman's compensation, I'm not arguing rates because we all have different rates, but all of these people presently are now being covered when they have an accident. There is no damn way for SAFE to go out and collect the compensation or the money back from the contractor because he hasn't got it. But if you go at the man letting the contract, now you're giving SAFE something that SAFE can go out and they can do their job. And they've got a place to get the money. And they need a stick. And you haven't given them a very big stick down there. And I disagree with them most of the time, but I happen to agree they need a stick.
Well, the people who are involved in these phony partnerships are already violating the law. Is that correct?
No.
Why not?
Because I have an option to cover myself. It's an option. I may cover myself if I will. I do not have to.
There are some definitions of employer-employee relationship.
Our states.
And so that's what I'm saying. If there is an employer-employee relationship, and in that relationship, that employee is not being covered, that's a violation of the present law. Is that correct?
An employee on construction must be covered, yes.
That's correct. So there's a violation of the law right now under that situation.
No, because partners are not employees.
There is supposed to be an employer-employee relationship. If there is that employee relationship, that man's got to be covered.
So, if I could give you an example, I know of one in Coos Bay. There's a linoleum contractor's license up on the board, and it's a group like that. But actually, as far as bidding on jobs and functioning, they function as one organization with everybody as an employer-employee. That's the way it actually operates. But as it's set up legally, it's set up as a partnership with all these people being independent contractors, and they get out of the whole thing. And I think what you're asking is a factual question. If, in fact, they are in that employer-employee relationship, would they not be circumventing the law? And the answer to that is yes. But the problem is that they're allowed to have an independent license as a contractor. They set up in a partnership, and you can't prove the independent, the employer-employee relationship. And what they're after is that these guys now go out and they contract with bid with all the other subcontractors, and they do not bid in their fixed costs for workman's comp because they're not required to pay it. Now, where they're getting caught more in what you're asking is in the unemployment area, because that's what they've been hassling over with the unemployment division, because the unemployment division has been picking those people up where the workman's comp has not. And I guess if there was a factual analysis of it, if in fact there is an employer-employee relationship, you're right. They would probably be covered, but I don't think you're ever going to prove it.
Well,
the way they've got it set up.
Yeah, you know, I can see the trend on this thing. If this bill is adopted, and it's not going to solve the problem, because that independent contractor will reluctantly pay the workman's comp. But he may bid his job at 50 cents an hour less for his own work than the other guy. Now, the next piece of legislation is that they will all have to bid at the same rate per hour. You know, and it just leads one thing onto the other. And I'm really offended by this kind of legislation.
Well, I think that what we're after within it is to see that everybody that's working on the job is properly covered, so that they will be covered. I would hate to have you operating a proper business up here, and then I would come along here and I'd get some people, and we'll work for less money, and I think that that's our option if we wish to work for less money. But I feel that we should be properly protected under the law, so that if we're injured, that my crew should not become a burden on your crew. Your crew should not have to take care of my crew because we didn't want the coverage. We're independent as hell. And you're from an area that has a lot of independent people. And I think that there's independent people all over. These people have a right to be independent. But by the grace of Hannah, when they've got a problem and break a leg, they're down to the county hospital. And I'd hate like the devil to have to stand in front of them and tell them they couldn't get food stamps when they qualify under the law to get the food stamps. I don't think that your crew should be having to pay for my crew over here because we're free spirits. I think that my crew should be able to provide for themselves so they don't become a social burden, and everybody properly covered will protect that social burden away from your crew.
I think what you said, I have one more statement,
okay.
And that's we are totally taking away the right of people to direct their own lives, and if an individual wants to do something on his own, we are taking that away from him. And if he wants, and along with that goes assuming the risk.
Thank you. Al?
On your line of thinking, though, suppose that this same person, you're assuming that he's going to become a social burden, and I haven't seen any statistics yet of how many people have become social burdens of anybody, number one. Number two, if this individual wants to go out and buy private insurance via the route of buying hospitalization and disability insurance, and he doesn't feel that he needs all of this compensation that we're passing down here, and the rate's too high, why shouldn't he be able to make this choice? I'm in the insurance industry, and I find more and more people who are either corporate officers or private entrepreneurs or are in partnerships who are giving up workman's compensation, who are buying hospitalization and are buying the benefits that they want out of disability income, and telling somebody to take the workman's comp rate and keep it. And I think we've priced ourselves completely out of the market in the contractor trade, and I now see that the contractor trade is taking their rate up this time. I've got an average rate of 30% increase. I think that these people ought to have a choice. And I don't think they're going to become a social burden.
Well, I think that we have a three-way bill that we passed a long time ago. And this, allows insurance companies, I can come to you and buy my workman's compensation from you. I do not have to go down and buy it from SAFE. So all I'm saying that I should have to provide the insurance, and I may buy it from you. I may choose to buy it from you. I think right now today I'll tell you I would buy it from you if you're selling insurance. And I think that you
are going to do any good. I can't persuade him. I've talked about the two-way bill with him, and he just isn't going to move.
He doesn't like it. So I don't think that we're saying that they must run down and take SAFE coverage. We're not saying that. We're simply saying that
missed my point. I'm not talking about workman's comp. I'm talking about there is another way to cover yourself, and that is it doesn't have anything to do with workman's compensation. You can cover yourself through a combination of Blue Cross and OPS and disability income. And because of the rate that you have on workman's comp, you're finding, and I think you're going to find, an increasing number of people, because workman's comp rates have become so high that they're going to try and circumvent this.
Okay, Karen, we're going to have to keep going. We're going to start at 10. You have to understand, I
certainly do.
I understand my colleague from Vida, Representative Rogers, whenever you talk about coverage, and he gets excited about things like that, and is the author of the Lane County Nudity Ordinance, whenever you start talking about coverage, he has a reaction.
Right.
There you go. Because he thinks people should all be covered.
That's what I'm saying, they should all be.
I just don't know how close you are. In agreement.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Gary Goodwill?
Goodwin. I'm sorry, Gary.
All right.
Representative, if I may just give you a picture to look at.
Yeah,
what goes with the friends?
Thank you.
These pictures were taken. I'm Gary Goodwin, Portland District Councilor, Carpenter's Business Representative. I have been for the past 4 years. I've been a carpenter since 1949, and I'm here to testify on what's happening in the construction industry. I'll read from my text here, and then I'll describe these pictures to you. This is the same testimony that was given before the Senate committee. Testimony has been given in the past to committees in regarding workman's compensation insurance coverage. But still, it seems to me that people don't seem to care. They don't seem to believe that the legitimate contractor is being forced out of business. Again, I use the word legitimate contractor. We would like to make a sincere effort to convince this committee that there are thieves out there in the real world. What we're referring to earlier is a contractor with 6 employees, and there are not many of them left in the construction industry, in the residential field in particular, who were paid last year some $14,000 in workman's compensation premiums on his employees. The sum is based currently on the 13% of payroll insurance for workman's compensation. That same contractor can call these employees subcontractors, pay them in cash, still get the same margin of profit, put an additional $14,000 in his pocket from his workman's compensation savings that he did not have to pay, let alone Social Security contributions, unemployment insurance, and so forth. These pictures that I've submitted, gentlemen, were taken in a one-day stint before we appeared before the Senate Labor Committee, and Mr. Hall and myself grabbed the camera and went out and did it, and they came down and testified on Memorial Day. The number one picture you looked at is a two-man partnership in Newburgh, subcontracting the floor, post, and beaming system. Now, that's after the foundation has been placed in. On that same project, a two-man partnership, subcontracting the framing.
This is the outside walls with the siding intact. The same tract in Newburgh, a two-man partnership was doing the roof systems. This is all on literally the same house down there. This man's doing the framing here, the floor systems, the framing here, and they come back and they keep doubling up. The other picture, number four, is Washington County off of 185th. There's a three-man partnership. We came upon framing a house. Three-man partnership. The other one, we ran over to King City. There was a two-man partnership, again, post and beaming the floor. Picture number six was a three-man partnership in Washington County, off of 185th. Picture number seven was a three-man partnership putting on all the siding on a $2 million job in Clackamas County. That's a pretty large construction job. Two-man partnership. Picture number eight was a two-man partnership doing all the finish work in a $3 million project in Multnomah County on Barnes Road. It's still under construction, if anybody care to go up and look at it. Picture number nine was on Barber Boulevard, a $2 million project. All phases, from the foundation to the roof system to the finish, was done by subcontractors. I mean, I'm saying illegal subcontractors under my definition. These are partnerships doing the work. Picture number 10, a single siding job, as was the interior finish, sub to partnerships in Clackamas County. Picture number 11 is the one that Mr. Hall referred to earlier, a $1,500,000 project in Washington County off of 185th and Sunset Highway. 35 citations were issued by the Builders Board. No state license. No IRS account number. No Social Security account number. No TriMet account number, which comes with your tax account number. And 35 sole proprietorships and partnerships on this one project. It's rather grim testimony. I've been out in the field, as what I say is in the real world. I have worked as a carpenter for an employer all my adult life. I've enjoyed working under those conditions. As Mr. Hall testified, it's no great thing for my current employer to call me a subcontractor, I am a business representative now at what I'm doing now, and save a big chunk of money. As Representative Rogers says a few minutes ago, you're going to throw a net out, you're going to catch a lot of people. Insurance coverage, whether it be through SAFE or independent insurance agents, is the key to the whole program. If you're a legitimate contractor, you are going to be covered. You're not going to take the chance of getting hurt on a construction site. Just as you, I'm sure all of you have automobile insurance to drive down that highway. You don't have to have it, but you do because you want to protect yourself and the person that you might get hit from a lawsuit. What we're asking is equitable treatment for our legitimate contractors in the state of Oregon, and I think this bill would put them on a competitive basis. It will not raise the cost of housing. It will probably cut down the margin of profit from the illegal contractor. But it's something that must be stopped. This may not be the true answer, but it's got to be stopped, or pretty soon there's not going to be a legitimate employee in the state of Oregon. And I'm not kidding, gentlemen. This has happened in the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years in this area in the construction industry. And it's just like wildfire. It's spreading like crazy. We have talked to the people in the state income tax division, and they finally believe us. Unemployment people are beginning to believe us. They're taking cases. They're checking them out. They're finding out what we're saying is true. There are millions of dollars out there being lost to workmen's compensation. The remark was made a short while ago, the premiums keep going up. I agree with you. The premiums in workmen's compensation have skyrocketed because it's getting so that nobody's paying anymore. When you get the same coverage and nobody's paying in, you have to raise the rates of those that are paying. I think it's atrocious. As Mr. Hall said, I would certainly go to you for coverage on a construction job if I could get it at a less rate. Our theory is, and I know it's far-fetched, that if there's more people paying, the rates should stay stabilize themselves or even possibly come down. In the Portland area, as little as 2 years ago, we had over 6,500 carpenters working in my organization. Today, we're down to 4,500. The majority of those 2,000 that are absent now are out there calling themselves subcontractors. How long is it going to go on? We're asking and urging you to support this bill.
Thank you, Gary.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to talk about it. I built a house in 1970, and I made a list of the things. The excavation was done by an individual who owned his own bulldozer and equipment, did not have any employees. The foundation was done by employees, and all of this was done on a bid basis, every bit of it, done by employees of a company. The framing was an employer-employee. The sheetrock was done by employees of a company. Carpet, linoleum, and tile by employees of a company. The plumbing was done by an individual and his son. The electrical work was done by an individual who was one of a two-brother partnership. The heating and gutters, the sheet metal work was done by an individual with the son. The roofing was done by an individual. The weather stripping was done by an individual. The cabinets were done by employer employees. Now, some of these people who were individuals then now have larger companies and have employees.
True.
And under this bill, I would have had to provide workman's compensation for all these people unless they individually provided it for themselves.
No. As a contractor, that would be correct.
No.
He was a contractor.
Okay, okay, that's right. That's what I'm telling. I want you to read Bill, lines 6 and 7, where it says, if any person engaged in a construction business, you are not engaged in a construction business, and you wouldn't be covered by it. But now, if you hold yourself out as Rogers Construction Company and you're building your own home, you got a problem.
What year was this, Representative Rogers?
1970.
Mm-hmm. In 1970, that house had approximately 11 subcontractors, as you stated there.
Yeah.
Today, on that same house...
With all the checks I wrote, I must be missing a couple of three. But.
Today, that very same house, Representative Rogers, you would find over 21 so-called, quote-unquote, subcontractors on that very same house. And this is a fact. I deal in it every day.
Why would I find that many?
23% payroll taxes and insurance that you as an employer used to pay out to your people. Your employees sitting around this room. Today you don't pay 23%. You call yourself a contractor. Each person sitting at this table is now a subcontractor. You are saving the 23% payroll taxes and insurance and overhead that you used to pay out as your own employees. But still you're getting the same service from the individuals by them calling themselves subcontractors. They are excluded from the law because I am a subcontractor. I am a subcontractor. I do not have to pay these payroll taxes and insurance. It's a heck of a thing to say, and it is a fact of life.
Well, this company that did the foundation work, company that did the sheetrock work, company that did the carpet, linoleum, and tile, the plumbing, the heating and gutters, the electrician, the roofing, I don't know about the weather stripping, the cabinets, and I forgot about the insulation. I knew there were more.
Mm-hmm.
They're still into it. Those people are still in business today with employees, and those people report to a central place every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're controlled, and they're employees in every sense of the word. And I'm sure that there's no way that, those employers could circumvent this, or they are not circumventing it.
No. Again, Senator, you're referring to the legitimate contractors. The owner of that company that you're referring to undoubtedly, without question, has insurance on himself because of the fact he is a legitimate contractor. If you are a legitimate contractor, you will protect yourself and your family, your environment, by having insurance on yourself. If you're legitimate, you'll do this.
No, the employer doesn't have to have insurance upon himself.
No, he is an employer.
Even though he may be still working on the job site himself, he does not have to cover himself now.
This is true.
He has to cover any employees.
I would like to offer a challenge that if he is working on a job site, I'll bet you he has some sort of insurance to cover himself in case something happened, whether it be workman's comp or not.
Private hospitalization.
These people I'm referring to, Representative, have absolutely nothing, and they're calling themselves contractors.
This is
the reason.
How do you know they don't have individual hospitalization, life insurance, and disability coverage?
How do I know it's raining outside? I'm in the field every day talking to
you. No, I'm asking you a question.
The people that we have checked out, Representative, do not have IRS numbers. One case, and I will not use a name because this is probably record, but I testified the day before yesterday, has not paid a nickel's worth of income tax since 1973. The IRS was very interested in this gentleman. These are the people we're trying to capture in this net. We're not out to get anybody else. If you want to, I don't believe in amendments, but you say, all right, accept legitimate contractors. That would be a fantastic amendment. I would accept that in a minute.
We'll work.
Define a legitimate contractor.
We'll work on that.
It is snowballing, and it's out of proportion. Representative Lindquist area out there in Milwaukee, I'm very familiar with. These pictures that we took were all over this five-county area that we represent.
Mr. Goodwin?
Yes.
You gave us an example of this one project. I forget what you said. It was in Multnomah or Clackamas.
What picture is that?
I don't remember which picture, but you mentioned that their project involved 35 sole proprietorships and or partnerships on this one job. No Social Security, no unemployment, no TriMet.
That's correct.
Holding.
That's correct.
Some of these things, well, maybe they could escape, but there isn't any way they could escape paying income tax, whether it's withheld or whether it's just a declaration of income in that taxable year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if the IRS is investigating that
situation? One of the people that I just referred to happened to be a subcontractor on that particular job. He had not filed income tax or anything since 1973. We reported to the IRS this finding, this factual finding, to the IRS people, and also to the workman's compensation people. They were very cooperative. They went out there. They issued these citations.
Mm-hmm.
They're understaffed. I know they're understaffed. We're in the field every day. We have five people in our area that are in the field every day. We complain when we come across things. And this is not only union or non-union contractors, but we turned a union contractor into the IRS people as well because he was doing exactly the same thing. If everybody is paying their fair share of insurances, IRS numbers are TriMet tax up in our area, and they're bidding on a base equal basis. And when, again, overhead and profit becomes the margin of getting a contract, not how much you can beat the system, then we're going to have this situation stopped. But you've got to have a base to work from. If I'm paying my fair share of workman's comp insurance and the man next to me is not, you know darn well who's going to get that project.
Any other questions, Mr. Goodwin? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gordon Van Antwerp?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gordon Van Antwerp, field representative for the Painting and Decorating Contractors Association of America. Our people are certainly concerned with the problem that does in fact exist. There's very little that I could add to the testimony that's already been given. However, as demonstration of proof, I would suggest the review of some of the cases that have, in fact, been investigated by the Compliance Division of the Workmen's Compensation Board I was in the office of the director a short time back. There was a list, or I should say a sheaf of papers, each one of which represented a separate or different case. I was privy to the top one, which contained some 19, quote, employees, which were not covered at all. I respect their activity in pursuing this. However, it doesn't, the present law does not completely address the problem. I would certainly concur, at least tentatively, in the proposal that Senator Atiyah made here with respect to Senate Bill 462. I believe that this tracks in the correct direction. Our membership is comprised of sole proprietors, partnerships, and corporations. All of our members who work with the tools of the craft on the job sites are covered either by SAFE or by a private insurer. And my people resent very highly, and very realistically so, those that attempt to circumvent coverage, that do not provide it for their employees, and indeed make a sham of the law itself. Mr. Chairman, my parking meter is about due. I'm going to cut it off at this point.
All right.
I appreciate your attention.
Okay. You have any questions?
Thank you very much.
No, thank
check
you.
That meter. Thank you got a real good deal out there. I think you get nickel for a half hour, an hour for a dime, and for two or three times that much money, you get another 30 minutes or something.
Well, right. I hope I don't have a yellow tag.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Mr. Stanfill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Robert Stanfill. I represent the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. You've heard ample testimony this morning regarding Senate Bill 462. Therefore, I won't go into details on it other than to say that the State Building Trades Council endorses and trusts that you will give a due pass recommendation to this bill. As far as the amendments that Senator Tia put in, we don't find no big quarrel with them. I would like to go over number one amendment that he made. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, that was if a subcontractor was not in compliance, that would not make the general contractor in non-compliance. I think maybe if that general contractor was put in a position, possibly, that he might be in non-compliance, he would see to it that he got a subcontractor that was in compliance. Other than that, I just hope that, because this is a very important bill to the construction industry, not just to the carpenter and the painter, but to the roofer, the sheet metal worker, and right on down the line, brick mason, all of them. So, with that, thank you for allowing me to testify.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question?
Yes, Representative.
Bob, it seems to me that this actually is a legitimate contractor's bill more than it is working man.
As I mentioned to you before in my testimony before the Senate, this is really an employer's bill. However, it was introduced by the Oregon AFL-CIO at the State Building Trades Council request, which came through from the Carpenters District Council. The way we feel about it, the contractor that is employing our people and paying either to an insurance company or SAFE, and is paying all his bills currently, he is being gradually forced by underbidding practices in the industry, and pretty soon we won't have anybody to, all of them will be contractors. we won't have anybody to send to the contractors if it keeps going.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rogers.
ORS 656.052 is mandates coverage for an employee. The penalty for a violation of that specifically is a fine of not less than $25 nor more than $100. And each day in which there is a violation constitutes a separate offense. Now, there is a penalty for a violation of the present law. Now, the penalty may not be adequate, but it goes into the fact that if someone has an employee working for him, he must provide the coverage. Now, this is happening. There is no debate on that point. There are people who have employees who are not providing the coverage by any genuine definition of employee. And why do we have to have this bill, 462, instead of strengthening this penalty provision?
Representative Rogers, it's not the contractor that has the employees that I think that this Senate Bill 462 relates to. It's to the so-called employee who makes himself a contractor. So if you and I go into partnership, are you my employer, or are you the employer?
Now, if we're in a legitimate partnership, if you and I go into a partnership to do something, and it's a legitimate partnership, you and I do all the work, and we contract, that's a legitimate partnership. And you and I then should have the choice of whether we are going to have to be covered under workman's comp or whether we can have other coverage or no coverage at all.
But are we employees or are we contractors?
We're contractors in that situation. We are not employees.
But the only
if I'm looking for an employee and you come to me looking for a job and I say to you, the only way you can have the job is to sign this thing that says you are now a partner and I'm going to pay you
so much,
$6 an hour or whatever it is, that's a phony partnership, and that should be, there should be a heavy penalty for this happening.
Let me give you an illustration of what happens in one industry. I'll take the roofing. Roofing contractors as a whole hire employees to do all their work. There's specialists in the roofing industry where there'd be asphalt shinglers. Some of these contractors will hire an employee and he's on a hot roof today, and naturally he's being covered. Tomorrow, that contractor might send him out on a small house, a couple guys. They will put that on by the square rather than by the hour, and he will pay them, say, maybe $100 or $150 a piece to roof that house. Well, they're contractors on Wednesday, but Friday, they're an employee doing a hunt with them. So we'll take care of that kind of a situation, too.
We'll take care of a lot more situations than just that.
Please. But I think the benefit will be much more beneficial than the injury.
I'm Bob.
Cool.
How are you?
Pretty good, Jack. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Mr. Jack Kalinowski. Jack, Senator Attia was in with the amendments, and if you're going to talk to that,
I'm not.
Okay. The bill's going to have to be set for another hearing, public hearing, because of the amendments. They haven't been presented to the committee, but as soon as they're presented, I will have them circulated to all the people that signed up. Bob, if you'd have everyone leave their name and address with the clerk, that as soon as the amendments that Senator Attia was talking about have been drafted, I will see that they're sent to each of you in Portland. So if you'll leave your a number, address as well, I'll do it that way. I've got an out-of-town witness on another bill.
I'm just going to make a comment. Thanks. A brilliant suggestion.
You know what I'm going to start doing, Jack? I'm going to start having you testify first, because you must be getting an inferiority complex that every time you come before the committee, I'm always saying, Jack, next time, tell me what your problem is.
I don't have an inferiority complex, Mr. Chairman. My first comment was going to be, I'm the only one signed up opposed to the bill, so that guarantees passage of it.
It's heavily weighted in the other space.
Yes, I see that. No, Mr. Chairman, I simply wanted to answer Representative Otto's question of Senator Attia, the subcontractor kind of thing. Under the terms of this bill, as I understand it, Representative Otto, the subcontractor one, the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractor, would be the person letting the contract to subcontractor two. That subcontractor would be responsible then. Second thing, Mr. Chairman, my brilliant thought, which occurred to me while listening to this testimony.
Can we get back to first brilliant thought?
Go ahead.
I've only had one today.
Well, anyway, you said the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractor would be the, in this case, the prime, what you're saying, right?
Yes.
All right, what about the prime above the prime?
He would not be involved. This is the person letting the contract under the terms of the bill as it's now worded.
Okay, the prime lets to another subprime, and that subprime lets to a subcontractor.
Yeah.
They're all covered.
The prime, if the subcontractor subs out work, like you described, to a subcontractor, then that subcontractor would be the one who would be liable, but the prime would not be.
All right.
Brilliant thought. If the problem is simply, the bill creates a problem that Senator Attia has addressed, the amendments I know you're going to consider. If the problem is the sole proprietor, partners, and officers of corporations who are doing this kind of thing, then it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that the problem could be very simply solved by going into 656.027, subsection 7, and which defines who is not required to have workman's compensation coverage. And in this case, it says sole proprietors, partners, and officers of corporations. And then I would think you could simply add the words, except those engaged in the construction industry. That, in effect, would make sole proprietor, partner, partnership, or officers of corporations who are laboring on a construction project non-complying employers if they do not provide workman's compensation coverage for themselves or their employees. That would narrow the thing down so it doesn't cover the whole gamut and create the problems for the general contractor that's built. That's all I wanted.
Jack, as soon as those amendments are up, I imagine you're going to have a role in them with Senator Attia and Pat Randall. So I'll set it up probably again as soon as possible. I'll set it again Friday morning, right now.
May I ask the brilliant witness a question?
With his brilliant ideas, sir.
Erudite also.
Yes. Jack. Getting down to specifics, I have. I've seen jobs where there's been paving contractors on the job. All right, and then I also see a lot of different trucks. Are these trucks individually owned, and are these people calling themselves independent contractors?
Often they are individually owned, and they are owner-operated trucks. And they would be independent contractors, and they have the option.
Subject to carrying workman's comp or any of the other?
Under the bill and under the amendment that...
I mean now.
Now they are not required.
All right. Under the bill they would be required.
Yes, they would be required.
Right.
Jack, thank you very much. Bob Kennedy has signed up, but Bob, I'm going to wait and hold off until you see the amendments and you come back down again. I have an out-of-town witness on Senate Bill 701. I'm going to close the hearing at 462. It will be set again for a public hearing again Friday morning, so that we'll have the amendments by then. Get on. If you want to do it that way, Bob, that'd be fine. If I get them today, I will see that you get them to the, in the mail, so that you probably...
Have the drill call my office.
Okay, why don't you do that? Why don't you do that? Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on 462. I'd like to open the hearing on Senate Bill 701. Mr. Frank Jackson?
My name is Frank Jackson. I represent Firefighters Local 851 in the city of Eugene, Oregon. I'd like to urge your careful consideration of Senate Bill 701. There is a question that has arisen in Senate Bill 701 as amended by the Senate. The last sentence, I believe, on the amendment indicates medical evidence or other kinds, and I don't know what they mean by other kinds. There's a concern that we have in Eugene that other kinds may be a Wyatt Earp approach where somebody's shooting from the hip in order to force court application and court appearances for an injured workman under the heart section of the firefighter law. We have an additional concern in the city of Eugene, and it's documented. If the committee wishes to see the documentation, I can arrange that. Under the block form in 801, an 801 form is the form you fill out when you are injured under an occupational law, and it says under the employer section, do you have any reason to doubt the validity of this claim? And the employer, fire department administrator in the city of Eugene, has checked no. They checked the box no, they have no reason to doubt it. It then goes to the personnel office, and that is scratched out, and they write a big question mark. They don't say that they doubt the validity, but that question mark automatically goes to the investigators. Subsequently, then the claim is always denied, and you have to go through the hearings appeal, then the court, and et cetera, and et cetera. In the meantime, a person is off the job for 6 months to 12 to 14 months. He's out of sick leave. He's off of state industrial, and he can be without remuneration during that period of time. And because of this, we would incur, I would urge your serious consideration Senate Bill 701, but I would urge careful consideration of the amendment that is amended in the Senate on that last sentence, because it may be a Wyatt Earp approach.
Okay. Frank, I read that, and I have the same concern of what it means.
All right.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to set the bill back up for Friday morning again.
Okay, if the committee is interested in the evidence that I have, and I'm talking about the actual 801 forms, I'll be glad to provide that for you if you wish.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Has this happened more than once, or?
It happens in every single case where a firefighter is injured in a heart and lung bill in the city of Eugene. He works for the fire department.
First it's no, and then it's crossed out in a question mark.
Yep.
What they do is a procedural matter, it just shifts the burden on the firefighter right now to come in with the medical evidence that he has incurred it, and they're not going to admit it at any time, because it is somewhat difficult to prove, and they're not going to admit that that could possibly happen unless the firefighter himself can prove it.
That's correct. And the burden would shift to the other side that way, and we feel it would eliminate, or at least tend to eliminate, the necessity of this person being off work that period of time. It obviously would also help if the system would speed it up some, but then that's...
It eliminates the presumption under the statute so easy. That, I believe
we would accept that.
Thank you, Frank. I want, for the committee, we go into session at 10 o'clock. The bills that are scheduled today, except sub 301, I want put back on the agenda Friday. It appears to me that I've gone through this list, and just about all the bills that are in the committee that are going to be worked on, to my knowledge at this particular time, and I hope no one takes offense for some reason that there isn't a bill. I totaled yesterday, and the committee appeared to have about 16 bills left that will be acted upon, and most of them, as you know, are workman's compensation bills. I think there were only two bills that I had in mind that were House bills that were still here. It wasn't that they were going to be sent out. They're workman's comp House bills that could be incorporated into one of the Senate bills. So you see the agenda, which is fairly close to what we have and left them to do in the committee. And in the next week, by next Wednesday, I intend to try to get the whole thing taken care of at that time. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Hearing none, we're adjourned.